Yet the simple joys of life, days filled with special moments. At Inward Half, we understand the essence of these moments. Feel the difference between our breathable fabrics and flexible apparel as you disconnect from the hustle and bustle and reconnect with what truly matters. Inward Half, simple luxury for on and off the course.
Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour number two is brought to you by our friends at Logo Solutions. Logo Solutions is powered by SM Athletics. If you are a business owner, a club director, maybe you run a kickball league, a member of a social or religious organization and have a logo and need merch to help represent your brand, your club, your organization, or your mission, well, check out Logo Solutions powered by SM Athletics. You have a logo, they have a solution. From custom apparel to headwear and promotional items, Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your branded merchandise needs made right here in East Tennessee. Be sure to give them a call for all of your logo needs. 865-966-3434. That's 865-966-3434. Sam, what did we miss from the night before?
Thanks, John. In the NBA, you've got some news here coming out. Michael Rubin, the devil of the sports world, CEO of Fnatics.
He's a good villain.
That'd be another one.
You know what? Fnatics.
Yeah.
Fnatics is a good villain. It would have been nice if you'd have thought of that 5 minutes ago, Sam.
Well, he's trying to clean up his image a little bit. Michael Rubin and the Sixers ownership, they bought 2,000 tickets for Game 6. Obviously, home game for Philly there. But they bought 2,000 tickets for local first responders, healthcare professionals, things like that. Sounds really good. You know, help the community a little bit. But I think they're doing that a little bit in response from the New York fans taking over their last home game. They're trying to get a couple more of their fans, you know, in the seats and stuff like that. So they'll release 2,000 tickets to some local first responders and things like that.
There's no doubt that's the strategy. Yeah. I mean, it's a good altruistic thing to do, but that's the hidden mission.
This is really embarrassing for the Sixers, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It looks good on the outside, but it's like,
You're the Philadelphia 76ers. You're Philadelphia. You're supposed to be this big sports town, right? Like prior to this series, Philadelphia would claim the number one spot, right? Like they would try to make that claim for the number one spot. At least it's like a top three, top four sports city.
I would think so.
You don't think the Boston Celtics would have to do this? The Boston Celtics are having to buy tickets up to give out to people. That's not happening. The Cubs, Chicago. I mean, I don't know what other cities are even have the claim, but like, I just can't imagine any other big franchise doing this. It's a nice gesture, but it's like, ironically enough, broke boy behavior. Broke fan base behavior.
It is.
Hey, we're going to buy all these tickets and give them away to first responders. Like, that's something like Tennessee was having to do during the Butch Jones era. Like, hey, don't empty the stadium. Give the tickets away to the kids. Give them to first responders. Come on, guys. Let's pack the stadium. It's a Game 6 playoff game. What the hell are we doing here?
2,000 is a lot.
So, like, do they go out in the resale market and buy them up?
I guess.
Like, are they able to track? Like, is this all going to be behind the Knicks bench?
It says they were, like, lower bowl seats from what I was reading, I think.
So, like, the Knicks bench was, like, really where it was going crazy, it felt like, right behind that bench. Like, people had bought those. So, like, did the Sixers go and buy those up, like, resale value-wise? Because I imagine it was a sellout, right? So, it's not like they had 2,000 left over in the box office that they could buy. Like, it's going to be a sellout. So, yeah, do they just go buy these off of the resale market?
I guess. There wasn't exactly a breakdown of where they bought them from.
Do these teams, like, I imagine that somewhere in your ticket contract, you have, like, some fine print language that they could take your tickets back and refund you at any moment? I'd imagine that's there at somewhere. Like, hey, you know.
You're just thinking that 2,000 people got their tickets snagged?
Well, I'm curious because I imagine there's something in the language like, yeah, like no resale. Like, I imagine somewhere down there's like tickets are not meant for resale.
It's about 10% of the total venue.
Yeah.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. But like I said, it was a sellout. You know, the lower bowl was, of course, sold out for a game six. So, like, I'm wondering if they bought – surely they weren't paying, like, three times face value for these. I mean, maybe they were. Maybe they were. But, like, you know, I saw that story with the Denver Broncos, you know, years ago where they were going to take season tickets away from a guy that had them in his family for, like, 30 years because he kept selling them. And he's like, well, I need the money. Like, I can make a little money. It's like during the Peyton Manning era, I'm pretty sure. And he's like, I'm having health problems. I need to make the money. And they're like, sorry, I got it in your tickets. You can't resell them. You can only resell like a certain amount, blah, blah, blah. And you've been selling all of them. So we're going to move on down the list to the next season ticket holders. I know the Braves did that. Well, I know the Braves did that too. Like the Braves have that clause in their contract that like you can only sell up to an X amount of percent of your season tickets. And you get put like they give you a warning if you aren't going to enough games.
Your account is on hold.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. My friend has Braves season tickets, and he sells a lot of them, and he got, like, a warning. I don't think they actually followed through and took anything away. But, like, he lives down in Atlanta and just sells most of the games and, you know, wants just the playoff priority. So I don't know if it's, like, you know, a season ticket clause. I don't know if they do it for individual games or whatever. But I imagine most of the people that are able to get these lower-level tickets, especially, like, behind the bench, already kind of have season tickets. So I don't know if the Sixers were like, hey, we're flexing our muscle here. Well, here's your refund. We're actually buying these tickets ourselves.
Some boxing news that you touched on there a little bit, John. But Ryan Garcia yesterday tested positive for performance-enhancing substance, Ostarine. I know that's been popular with some guys in the NFL. I know Taylor Lewan, that's what he got popped for back in the day. But, yeah, he tests positive for that. They're saying the day before and the day of his win over Devin Haney, he comes out yesterday and was on Twitter and, you know, in social media and things like that and was saying everybody knows that I don't cheat. I haven't taken
do
a
Do we
steroid.
Know that?
Yeah.
Everyone knows. Because when I saw the story, I was like, yeah, this makes sense. The guy that was tweeting as reckless as he was and was like, you know, doing his victory lap, and the way he was acting leading up to the fight, he looked like the type of guy that knew he had an ace up his sleeve, right? Like, he looked like the type of guy that knew, like, yeah, I don't really need to worry about this fight because I'm on steroids and I'm going to knock this guy out. I don't think you can say everyone knows I don't cheat. I think you cheat. And I'm somebody.
Also missed weight in the fight, so he missed out on, like, $600,000, it's saying, from his overweight, you know, bout there at the start. I mean, who knows what he's doing. He did kind of kick his ass, though. Like, I don't know if that's...
He looks like some man's on steroids.
That Ostarine one isn't, like, the biggest performance enhancer, apparently.
I don't know. But he looked like some... No, like, go back and, like, there's a match that looked eerily similar, except this guy almost died. But, like, when, like, I think it was Juan Manuel Morant... Juan Morant... who's this boxer? Hold on. I had it, then now I'm confusing him with the guy from Hamilton. Whoever knocked out Pacquiao.
I'm not great on boxing knowledge, honestly.
Knocked out Pacquiao, and Pacquiao had beaten him, and then, like, they come back, and he looks a little bit bigger. And then he hit Pacquiao with a left hand that almost killed him. Like, it knocked him cold out. And then he basically is, like, pops for steroids after that. Like, yeah, that makes sense. That's how Garcia looked, the way he was knocking him down. He knocked him down, what, three times?
Yeah, three times. I'm pretty sure that Ostarine is for, like, soreness in your muscles or something like that, if I remember from Taylor Lewan's defense of taking it.
Juan Manuel Marquez, not Miranda, Marquez. Okay. There we go. I thought I had it, and then I lost it. But, yeah, Juan Manuel Marquez.
He definitely could have been taking it, though, because I think I do remember I want to say it was Floyd Mayweather telling him to just come into the fight overweight and just look like he's bigger than him. So maybe he was like, yeah, just look like you're bigger and be overweight, but really you're just hopped up on steroids right now ready to kick his ass.
Yeah, I mean, that might be why he couldn't cut weights.
Maybe, yeah.
Like, when you add that to it, like, that wrinkle, like, I imagine if you're on these PEDs, like, it's adding muscle, it's, you know, it's bloating you up. I'd imagine it would be tougher to actually cut and be at the weight you're supposed to be at. So, like, no Ryan Garcia. I don't think you get the benefit of the doubt here.
He just took the approach of acting like it was a joke the entire camp.
I feel like you should be allowed to get sued. Like, I almost
they might be able to.
Like, I almost feel like you should be arrested. Like, I know it's sports, and like I know it's a slippery slope, but like if you're knowingly taking these steroids and like you're punching someone in the head, that seems like it's a little bit more dangerous. Like you could actually really hurt somebody. Like Manny Pacquiao, again, he got knocked out cold. I thought he got killed by Marquez. And I don't think he was ever the same. This Devin Haney guy, like are we sure he's ever going to be the same? Think about the lost wages he's going to have now that he has a loss on his record. He's no longer the champ. He's probably got a concussion from getting knocked out three times. Like those boxers, man, they lose their aura whenever they get beat like that.
This article says that Amir Khan, he's some British fighter, I guess. The UK anti-doping agency had a 2-year ban for him after he tested positive for the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine they'll bring the hammer down on Garcia. Of course, he's denying it. Everyone knows he doesn't cheat.
Yeah.
They should lock him up. It's no different than beating someone with a – I mean, like, you know, they say those boxers' hands are deadly weapons, right? Like, that's what they always talk about with the fighters. Like, you can't go out fighting civilians or else you get charged for assault with a deadly weapon. And you take that deadly weapon and you give it steroids on top of it. I don't know. It seems a little reckless. Seems like that's – it should be assault, brother. Lock him up.
In the MLB, some news here. Walker Buehler is finally returning. He will make his first start in 2 years. It's been Tommy John for him in June of 2022. He's been rehabbing that for a while now. It's his second time he's gone through Tommy John, so trying to not do the impossible, but do probably the improbable, I would say. He's been in the minors for a little bit now, working down in Oklahoma City, AAA. Minor league rehab starts, 4.15 ERA, 21 strikeouts and 9 walks. But, you know, obviously this is a huge guy for the Dodgers rotation. Signed Yamamoto in the offseason, and he's been pretty solid. And you've got guys like Tyler Glasnow and, you know, some young players on that roster. But Walker Buehler, definitely the guy that they love to have in that rotation. Electric stuff that he's got. We'll be excited to see him back.
They need him back. I mean, Glasnow has been solid, but he's so fragile. And they brought James Paxton in, too, who's been really good in years past, but he's up and down for them, to be sure. That's a gap for them right now as they're pitching. So hopefully Walker's going to be back in form.
How has the big free agent signing, the foreign pitcher, how's he been? Has he been noteworthy for them?
Yamamoto?
Yeah.
He's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He kind of got off to a rough start, and then he's really settled in since then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he looks good.
Yamamoto?
Mm-hmm. Yes. But they're, for as much money as they've spent, they're playing well, but they're not tearing it up right now.
Yeah, not blowing anyone out of the water, exactly. No. They always get it together, though. I feel like they never start strong.
No, that's true. Mookie's playing great. But
yeah,
beyond
Mookie's
that,
playing incredible.
Yeah.
Mookie's playing incredible. Lastly here, Tyler Boyd, free agent wide receiver. Obviously, post-draft now, you're going to start to see some of these veterans take some visits, you know, negotiate some contracts and kind of find some landing spots there. Tyler Boyd this week, though, he's going to make visits with the Chargers and also with the Titans. I believe he's in Nashville currently. I saw on social media that he's on his visit with the Titans right now. So some connections there with former offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. I think that one would be pretty interesting for the Titans as a little vet there in your wide receiver room. Obviously, you've kind of only got DeAndre Hopkins as the veteran in that group and a bunch of young guys kind of after that. So I think a guy like Tyler Boyd could definitely bring something to this wide receiver room. And, you know, you've obviously not really been confident in what you've had from Treylon Burks. I feel like he could benefit from, you know, a new coaching staff and everything like that, but hasn't been able to stay on the field in his time as a Titan. So I think a signing like Tyler Boyd would be really interesting for them.
Well, I think, Sam, the most important thing there would be his tie to Callahan and knowing that offense. Like, not only a vet receiver, but you want to bring a vet receiver in that knows the system that can maybe help some of the younger receivers, or really Hopkins too, and like the intricacies of the system and what you're supposed to do. I don't know the ins and outs of an NFL offense, but I'd imagine there's certain reads and certain language that they're going to use and carry over from Cincinnati. So it would help to have Boyd, who has been a solid vet. I don't know how much he has left. You know, there's usually like – How old is he? I mean, is he?
He's like 30. I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I imagine at this point he's right around 30.
His numbers are definitely declining, but definitely feels like a locker room guy, like you're saying.
29 years old, will be 30 in November. Like, I don't know how many years he has left in terms of being like an actual, like, real good productive receiver, but having him here as a veteran and helping teach that system and be a comfort liaison between Callahan and the offensive players, I think would be a pretty smart thing. But yeah, last year feels like was a pretty down year for him.
I think he only had like 600 something yards last year.
Yeah, and only two touchdowns.
Year before that wasn't too bad.
No, he's been a stud when they've had to lean on him.
Yeah,
he's very capable.
760, 5 touchdowns, 828, 5 touchdowns, 841, 4 touchdowns, and then a couple thousand yard seasons in 18 and 19, of course, before Chase and all them were there, but.
I think Bob's right there, too. Like, you've seen Higgins go down at times. Jamar Chase has been out, and it seems like they've had to lean on him at times to be that wide receiver, too, and he's stepped up.
Yeah, he's always up for it.
For sure. You know, I think he could be a guy that would be a trusted number three. It's just such an old receiving core, though, if he's actually, like, getting brought in as, like, one of your main contributors.
Like, all three of your top guys in their 30s.
Yeah, or just right there, like 29. But, like, yeah, like I would prefer they just try to make it work with Treylon Burks.
I think they're still going to.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of a contingency plan maybe.
Yeah. Which that's fine. You need depth. And, like, if you're going to throw the ball more, you're going to have more receivers. Like, the Titans have tried to get by sometimes with three or four receivers just active and on the roster. Like, I think the Titans moving forward are going to have to, have five at least ready to play. Because you're going to pass the ball more. I imagine that it's going to come in more three wide receiver sets and maybe even four receiver sets from times. And depends what Boyd's asking price is. I imagine he's going to be pretty cheap.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be too expensive at all.
All right, anything else?
That's about it.
Tennessee baseball, Jack Foster, coming up next. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Well, we don't have Jack Foster from Rocky Top Insider. You get the snooze. No answer, but we can still talk Tennessee, Florida. Maybe Jack will join us at some point. Tennessee heads down to Gainesville, number 3 in the country, although coming off of a midweek loss to Lipscomb. We might have him. They head down there tonight. Looks like Chris Stamos is going to take on Pierce Coppola. I just choked on Stamos. I know it's not Stamos, but I know it's not Stamos.
Stamos.
Yeah, Stamos. I want to always call him Uncle Jesse Stamos, and I was like, no, that's not right, so I went Stamos. I knew that wasn't right. We got Jack now.
It's Roberto.
It's not Jack. Does Roberto have more injury news for us? Because I told all my friends, Cal Stark, big-time injury. Next thing I knew, he's hitting home runs in the next series. Tennessee goes down to Florida tonight. Looks like this guy that Florida's throwing, I mean, you just look at his stats.
No, it's not good.
He started 3 games. He's 0-2, a 10.5 ERA. Seems like somebody, Bob, that should be a get-right game for the team, an offense that hasn't necessarily been performing well the last, 4 games or so, or really 3 games. But game 1 against Missouri, they were awesome. And then, 2 and 3, they kind of stunk. Should be a little bit of a get-right game. And in the years past, you would look and say left-handed pitching, something Tennessee can't really handle. But that hasn't been the case this year. Tennessee's been really good against lefties.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I want to put some stock into the fact that, when Tennessee bounces back off of a bit of a disappointing loss, Lipscomb definitely fits that bill. But when they lost the opening game in Lexington against Kentucky, they came around on Saturday game 2 and just went nuts, right? I mean, they had a huge first inning against the Cats, and hopefully we'll see some of that today. It seems like the pitching could line up to benefit things. This Florida team, though, it's interesting. I mean, I was looking at their you know, the record is obviously not great, but they do have the number one strength of schedule in the country. They've lost some really close series to, you know, most recently Arkansas. They lost that series. But both of the losses, I think, were one-run losses. So they're capable for sure. So this is clearly an important series for the Vols.
Florida and Vanderbilt. Next up on the schedule, we've talked about it. Tennessee needs to go probably 4-2 in these two series if they want to really solidify a top eight seed. We know Tennessee's lineup has been really explosive for most of the year and a little bit of a slump right now. But Sam, how do you view Stamos as a starter, a Friday or game one? I know tonight's Thursday, a game one starter in a big SEC series. Do you have confidence that he's going to come out and kind of continue his success? Does it give you any pause? And he still hasn't really been going deep into games, of course, just kind of been an opener of sorts. You feel good about him getting through that Florida lineup at least early on?
I do, yeah. I think Stamos has been really good in that opener role, and I think that's kind of just what they're asking of him. I don't think they're asking him to go super deep into those games, and I think they've got a pretty nice strategy there on those Friday nights with that opener role. And, you know, I think it's started to work for him. And I think you'll see Causey after that. I think you'll see Stamos go for as long as he can, hopefully two or three innings, and then, you know, hopefully hand it off to Causey and be able to do some work there deep into the game. But yeah, I have a lot of confidence in Stamos in that opening role. And it seems like this coaching staff does too.
Yeah. Like those two guys can usually get you to the eighth inning. Mm-hmm. I think against Missouri, Stamos, he got to what, 2 2/3, yeah, I believe, is what it was.
Yeah, I was going to say 2 1/3 or something like that.
So I think it was 2 2/3, right. And it was scoreless. And then, yeah, then Causey came in. That was a game that your offense gave you a big lead, and you didn't really have a lot of pressure in this game. I don't know what the offense is going to look like in Gainesville. They're going up against a pitcher with a really high ERA that has gotten touched a little bit, but Tennessee also, you know, has been struggling just a little bit at the plate. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 865-288-3131. Let's grab Roberto. Roberto, top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning, Johnny boy.
How are you, my friend?
I stand by my CalStar comments. He was hurt. He's a dirt dog, man. I really thought he was going to miss several games, because any guy who takes that injury, and what the training staff actually told me personally, guy I know on the training staff, I am pleasantly surprised he only missed 2.5 games.
What a dog.
I love him, man. He gets so much crap from our fan base. All he does is show up every freaking day, get behind the dish, catch a hell of a game, throw out runners, and occasionally pop a home run. What's wrong with that from your catcher? On a lineup just stacked with hitters. It doesn't matter.
I feel like Cal Stark has done a lot to win favor with the fan base. I mean, I know last year he was a little bit of a whipping boy. But, like, no, I think he's one of those guys that you look at and you can see improvement. And those are the type of players fans usually really, really gravitate towards. But I thought he's been a lot better this year.
Yeah, and I saw a piece on one of the local stations here where they focused on Cal this week. And he was also talking about last year, you know, he was a little down. You know, could have even thought about leaving, but he was like, this is his dream. He wants to be a Vol, wants to play here. You love hearing that story, so I'm happy to hear that, you know, happy to see, rather, that he's out there delivering to a certain degree, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's on the trajectory that, you know, you leave as one of the more beloved players whenever you see, and you can, like, obviously see the progression at the plate, and when you hear stuff like that of sure. Dream of being a Tennessee player, and then, of course, you're backing it up on the field, and the defense has always been there, but yeah, like, he's had some timely hitting, too.
Well, I'll screenshot and DM you during a game every time he strikes out.
Yeah, I know.
On a bad pitch, I will text you what people are saying.
I'm not saying you're wrong about that. No, I'm not saying that people don't get frustrated during the game. I'm just saying me personally, like I've really enjoyed Cal Stark's, and I think he's, like I said, fitting the bill of a player that you really start actually loving that becomes a fan favorite.
Yeah. Well, if you take away his on-base percentage, his OPS is almost still as high as Cannon Peebles' total OPS without his on-base percentage, which is damn near 400. Yeah. So I would just say I'm very pleased with his progression, And he's a catcher that can win you a national championship. He is. He's going to give you as many innings as he can. He's a dirt dog. It's actually not why I called. But I want to focus on Florida. People are going to look at the record. They're going to look that they're a fringe NCAA tournament team right now, which is true. If we take one, it's a good weekend, guys. Well, it's not a good weekend. It's an acceptable weekend. If we take two, it's a good weekend. They're really good. They really are. The record doesn't show it, but they're a good team.
Yeah,
and they can hit.
We were just talking about it, you know, number one strength of schedule nationally.
Right.
Could have, honestly, with a couple breaks here and there, could have swept Arkansas. I mean, they lost two games.
Swept Arkansas.
Yeah, so no, we agree with you, man. They're solid.
Well, the one thing that John, I'd like to – you said we need to go 4-2 over the next two series to really solidify a top eight seed. I don't know if I agree with that. I think we need to win probably four more games over the next nine.
That wasn't the projections I saw from someone who runs the numbers, that does the baseball RPI and does these permutations.
Mm-hmm.
They put a breakdown out of, you know, road wins versus home wins that Tennessee needs to be comfortably an eight seed, and that's or a top eight seed, and that's just what they had. That they had Tennessee needing to win. If they were only going to win two of the non-conference midweek games, they were going to have to find, I believe it was going to be seven SEC wins.
Oh, I see. Because we lost to Lipscomb.
Correct.
Oh,
because our RPI dropped down to number eight after that.
Wow. That was a pretty bad loss. And that's why Tony had Snead in there at the end trying to get the win. Or at least preserve an opportunity to get it. Yeah, that was a bad loss.
Now, if you guarantee me a sweep of South Carolina, then yeah, maybe you just need to go 3-3 on the road, and you know, 6-3 might get you there. But I'm talking about to feel comfortable and kind of lock it in. You're almost looking at 7-2.
21 SEC wins, 21-9 if we win six. I think every single SEC team that's won at least 18 SEC season games, regular season games, has been a host of a super.
How many times do you think that the 21 wins got you at third or fourth in the conference, though? I can't imagine too many times you finished in fourth place with 21 wins, which would be on the table with Kentucky possibly. But you'd almost assuredly be third place.
And also, Roberto, I feel like maybe the fact that Kentucky on the road is a great series win, but like that's really your only huge road series win
for sure
for the year.
For sure.
I don't know, George. I mean, you're saying
road win.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, you're saying series win on the road.
Yeah, road series win.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. That Kentucky win, especially, letting that Friday night game slip really hurts right now after losing to Lipscomb. But I don't know. I guess I'm just going to go with, I think Tennessee really needs to focus on winning one game this weekend, and two, you should feel really good. You sweep Florida, I guess you're it's going to actually improve your RPI, right? Because they're ranked so highly. So.
Yeah, Florida's still number, I believe, 19 last I saw in the RPI, so they're still getting looked at as a top 20 team. So, winning one game on the road, it's not a failure. I can't go with that being the goal or that being a good weekend, but if you go out there and win one, it's not the end of the world. But I think Tennessee's in a position with the goals they're chasing that two has to be the goal. This is a series that you have to look at winning the series.
I guess we'll see if the last three games is more of an apparition, or if we're staring down the barrel of we're slumping bad. I mean, Burke slumping the way he is, and he is really not a positive development for this team. I think he's the best all-around hitter on the team, and it scares me. Guys, have a great day.
Appreciate you, Roberto. I don't feel like there's anywhere really that Tennessee could go where I'm doing backflips or being like happy for one road win. I understand like that's always the kind of the goal in the SEC against your teams that feel even in talent, like win one on the road and win your series at home and you'll have a good record. But I just think Tennessee like is above that.
They're way too bad of a pitching team to me to be happy with just one win this weekend.
Yeah, like if you went down to Arkansas and they're going to have the advantage in almost every pitching matchup and out of the bullpen, if you're at Arkansas and you're saying like, hey, would you take one win? You'd probably say, okay, yeah. begrudgingly, though. Like, I wouldn't probably sit here on the day of and say, hey, let's just give me one. I'll lock that in. I'll take one and two. I think Tennessee and Vitello, bigger than that.
Feels to me like they, you know, tonight should be a win. Game two, you got Beam going, so I feel pretty good about that, regardless of who Florida throws. And then game three is Caglione, and he's, I'm just looking at his splits. I mean, he's solid, man.
He's nasty.
Yeah, so that may be the one. But, you know, I feel like if they get tonight, and then I feel better about them winning the series if they can just go out and take care of business tonight.
So is Caglione actually nasty at pitching? Because, like, when I look at the numbers, like, he's 5-0, but he gets talked about, or it feels like, just because of the at-the-plate stuff and him being, you know, one of the best players in college baseball, he gets talked about almost like Paul Skenes, but he's not anywhere near that as a pitcher. Like, when I look at his splits, 4.1 ERA, a 1.5 whip. So, like, I don't feel like he's a dominant pitcher. Now, I haven't watched. I'm not going to act like I've watched a lot of Florida and seen what the stuff he actually has and, like, how those stats came to be. But, like, when I see a game three pitcher with a, you know, plus 4 ERA and a whip of 1.5, to me that means Tennessee should be able to score, you know, 4 or 5 runs in that game at least.
He's absolutely a better hitter than he is a better pitcher. But
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a –
he's their closest thing to an ace, though,
yeah.
Right?
That
was my point.
Sure.
You know.
And that's not saying a ton, I guess, with this Florida pitching
staff. Yeah, I was going to say, being an ace, everybody has to have an ace. It doesn't mean they're an actual, like, traditional shut you down type of guy.
He's got the ability to shut you down in any SEC team, too. But, like, yeah, I don't think he's, like, world-beating stuff pitcher good, you know.
Well, I'm asking because that's the way I've heard him talked about all year.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of what I was –
world-beating hitter than he is a pitcher.
That's kind of what I was bracing for. And someone who, again, I don't keep up with all the other SEC teams and, you know, especially ones like Florida that have been struggling. Like, you know, obviously Skenes, you couldn't hide from him last year. But, like, the way Caglione's been talked about all year, I was anticipating him to come in with closer to like a 3 ERA or a 2.5 or be like more of a shutdown guy. When I see the numbers, my first initial reaction this morning was,
he's not going to like shut you down. Like just all impossible to get a hit off type guy. Like, you know, with Skenes, what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Felt like it was just like, God, you just have no chance against this guy. Like, he absolutely has the ability to you know, give up some runs.
Like, when I see that those stats, and again, I don't know what his stuff actually looks like, but like when I see those stats, I don't think there's any chance in hell he's like a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball next year. Or like in not next year, but just, you know, in the next 3 or 4 years. Like, it feels like maybe they let him be like a reliever type of guy. But
I,
like,
think he's just that good of a hitter. He's probably just going to go straight into hitting.
Like, okay, so he might not even pitch at all in the majors. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking he was more like the, you know, they were calling him Shohei Ohtani. And he's not Shohei Ohtani.
No, it's a little confounding, though. 58 strikeouts, 48 innings, opponent batting average 215, but also 35 walks. So,
yeah, that's where I guess where the whip. If he can get the walks down, his whip would look a lot better because he's not giving up as many hits.
Right.
But, yeah, he's not doing the he's not keeping runners off the bases. And just with Tennessee, if you start letting runners on base, all of a sudden those hard hit balls are 2- and 3-run home runs. And so, like, when I see the actual pitching stats, like the game one guy, 10 ERA. Game two, they don't even have the guy listed to be determined. Is somebody coming back from injury? Do we know, Sam? Like, do they just like piece it together every Saturday? Do they kind of switch it up? Because game two, like, they don't even have a starter listed yet. And then game three, Caglione, it was a good pitcher, but not anything I'm terrified of.
Yeah.
Tennessee could easily have the pitching advantage in all three matchups.
They got a guy that's has had 8 starts by the name of Liam Peterson. Another guy with 8 starts, Cade Fisher.
Okay.
So maybe one of those two guys, but Peterson's ERA is over 7.
Okay.
And Cade Fisher's is almost 7.
Okay.
So.
Well, Tony talked about that in his, I guess, questions and people ask about the Florida series, and he's kind of trying to do it diplomatically. It almost like he wanted to be like, hey, I don't know what the hell they're doing over there, but they ain't got Frank Anderson. But he's like, hey, you know, I'm looking here and I see their pitching staff. It seems like they got a lot of talent. Basically, I don't know how they aren't necessarily getting people out. He said, I've seen some of the arms, but I'm not in a spot to where I can speak intelligently enough about this guy's pitch or that guy's pitch, but there is an awful lot of talent sitting here in comparison to the record. Okay, these guys should be better. That's the way I took it, at least. But okay, like, yeah, when I see the actual pitching matchups and the way Tennessee's arms, because, like, we do need to point that out. We've been talking about the lineup struggling a little bit and maybe slumping a little bit, but the arms have been pretty good.
The bullpen's been great for you.
Yeah.
In SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, like, the midweek game, I'm throwing that out because you're trying to find arms and guys aren't necessarily as locked in. But in SEC play, now granted, Missouri kind of stinks. And Missouri also kind of helped you out. Missouri was really, really sloppy. Like, they just looked like such a poorly coached team where they're making so many base running errors. Maybe they could have actually scored some more runs against you. But, like, I feel pretty good about the pitching staff going down to Gainesville tonight. Any final thoughts as we preview this? That's all I got.
Same.
Get off to a good start. Get a win tonight. I think that's really important.
Well, that's something we've struggled in, right? Like, the game ones in these series have not been kind to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Not been kind. You know, the Alabama game was, but then you drop one to Auburn. You drop the first game to Kentucky. Which, credit to the boys, except for the Alabama one, ironically enough, for digging out of a hole against Auburn and against Kentucky and still winning that series. But I don't really want to go to Florida and lose game one because then you're putting yourself really behind it. And you just don't want two losses in a row. And I feel like if you lose tonight, it means your bats didn't do enough. Because I feel confident that Stamos and Kazi will hold Florida to four runs. If I set Florida's team total at 4.5, you take an over or under?
Maybe the over, honestly.
Taking the over? Okay, where would I need to set it for you to take the under? 5.5, 6.5?
Yeah, 5.5.
So you think they got five runs in them? Okay. Well, when I look at
you can get like a 7-5 win tonight.
Okay, well, I was going to say, when I look at the pitcher that Florida's throwing, like, Tennessee should score more than that, in my opinion.
Tonight's the only easy watchable game. It's on ESPN or ESPN2.
I believe it's ESPN.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it's ESPN.
And then it's plus, and it'll be the Florida announcers for the next two games.
I kind of like that. I'm curious to see how they are. I like hearing the homers.
Yeah.
As long as we're winning. Yeah, Florida, I mean, this is a team fighting for their lives. Fighting for their lives. We'll come back. We'll talk some Tennessee basketball. I don't know if you guys saw Rick Barnes and saw his quotes, but I think Rick let the chopper spray a little bit.
Yeah.
I think Rick let the chopper spray. We'll talk about that. Jonas Adu sitting there sick reading this. Stick with us. Rick Barnes let the chopper spray yesterday just with one statement. One statement was all it took. One line was all it took, I think, to really drive point the home of how Rick Barnes is feeling about his departing big men, probably one in particular. But when Rick Barnes was asked about new transfer Felix Akpara, Rick Barnes said, and I quote, "He brings us a physicality that we love to have that we haven't consistently had there in the post. He impressed me with the fact that he's got a really competitive edge about him, and that's going to fit in well with our guys. He brings us a physicality that we love to have that we haven't consistently had."
Yeah, that's about as tough a jab as you'll see from Rick, and it's absolutely a message.
When you see the video, and that was on, I don't know what exactly, was that on Orange and White Nation?
WAT.
Okay,
yeah.
Orange and White Nation. I want to give proper credit there. And when you see the actual video, Rick looks a little flushed in the face, which means that I think he's a little mad as he's talking about it. So I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I've got rosacea. Sometimes I look flushed in the face. I'm not casting stones. But like the screenshot I have that I've taken of the video, Rick looks pissed off because he is red in the face. And when you see that quote to it, it makes it look more like a shot than maybe it actually is. But to me, it seemed like a nuke that he dropped on. Because Rick, like you said, not usually going to do that to people.
Yeah.
At least like Rick Barnes, when he first got here, did that to players. I feel like Rick did kind of take shots at his own players that were still on the team. Like, he was always kind of trying to push some buttons and get some guys focused and motivated and would talk about their failures. But I feel like the last 3 or 4 years, that hasn't really been the case. Like, Rick's been pretty pretty complimentary of his guys. Jonas in particular. Like last year, I thought he went out of his way at all times to kind of compliment Jonas and try to kind of maybe will him into being a dominant big.
No, I agree. I mean, again, you and I talked with him about Jonas early in the season because Jonas was flourishing at that point. And he told us how he took Jonas aside and said, you can be as good as these guys you're going up against. It's really on you. And, you know, I think I agree. I think that may be why you heard a little bit of a comment like that yesterday is I think he felt like he did everything in his power to lift Jonas up and, you know, didn't work out. So, I don't know. It's And I think back to that press conference, it was, what, 2 weeks ago today, where he talked about Tobe and said, you know, we love Tobe, but he's got to make his mind up. I still stand by what I'd been hearing, too. I think Barnes had made his mind up. I think he probably knew Tobe was gone, you know, but just tried to take the high road there. But every man's got his limits. So, yeah, I think yesterday there was some subtlety there, but I think we all understand the subtext of the quote.
It seems, like I said, a nuke dropped on his head because it was what the fan base has been begging for when it came to Jonas Adu. Physicality. And it was something that frustrated the fan base when you've got that lack of physicality. So if I'm Jonas, and like all the reports were like, hey, he was distraught after the game. You know, people that were there, that people were watching on TV actually were like, hey, you could see how sad he looked on the bench. Some friends that were at the game said that they saw him like, you know, kind of head in his towel, walk into the locker room, kind of inconsolable after the game crying. So like, I imagine this is one of those things, Bob, that Jonas knows deep down is true. Jonas knows he's not physical enough. It's probably something the coaching staff has begged him to do and tried to motivate him to do behind the scenes. But like, it's one of those things like where you know somebody's deepest, darkest secret. You know what actually gets under their skin more than anything. And then that's the thing you use to argue with them. Oh, yeah, well, your mom's crazy. How about that? You know how I feel about my mother. Don't say that. You know we don't have a great relationship. And that's essentially what Rick Barnes has done to the public. Like, he's taken that insecurity that I imagine Jonas has as a player. Because how couldn't he? He sees what happens in the games. He's got a good front row seat to him. He saw the Zach Edey show. And Rick Barnes talked about that. And now, you know, basically, not only did he say, like, hey, Jonas has been soft. But he's like, yeah, this new guy's not going to be soft. This is what we need on this team. This is what fits our guys. The guys who are tough enough to stay, they want toughness. They want physicality. The players that are still here. We didn't get that last year. I doubt Tobe feels too bad about it because Tobe was too physical.
Yes, he was.
Tobe's probably like, hey, that's the other guy. He's talking about Jonas there, not me. Not me, but apparently Awaka said in his media availability with Arizona that he just felt that the offense at Arizona fit him better. I don't know what the hell that means. It wasn't like Ballo was shooting any jumpers or anything. Like, I don't know what it necessarily means. I thought Tennessee ran plenty of action for Awaka when he was in the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think different players, but Arizona, you know, they worked it into Ballo a lot. So maybe Tobe's thinking that can be me, you know? I don't know.
I mean, I think Awaka, maybe I'm wrong, you know, not going to claim to be a basketball coach, but like, I thought Awaka was pretty damn dangerous out on the perimeter with pick and rolls. Like, I thought his athleticism and getting him downhill, I thought was maybe him at his best. Now, is he a guy that you could throw the ball down to and let him bang against some people? Sure, but like, I don't know how successful he's going to be against starting centers that are going to be bigger. Because a lot of Awaka's minutes would be like, you know, as the game was flowing and maybe you're dealing with some backups and things like that. From the get-go starting, can he handle being a starting center at 6'8", that's going to be just getting the ball dumped down to him in the post. I don't know. I thought his athleticism was maybe his biggest strength at times, and I thought Tennessee did a good job of getting him out there with Dalton and Zakai and getting him moving.
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, he's going into some pretty competitive territory in the Big 12 now, too. You know, he's going to be going against good teams. He's going to get his wish. I think he's going to get a lot of run with Arizona, but I don't know. I'll be interested to watch that. And I'll be interested to watch Adu at – I'm still not convinced Adu at Arkansas with Cal is going to work that well.
I don't know how it's going to work for Cal. I don't know how it's going to work for Adu and Awaka, but I do think there is a very real possibility that you should be preparing for both of those guys to have, like, really good numbers. Like, I think it's possible that Cal unlocks Jonas and kind of figures some things out, and that Jonas has another all-SEC type of season. You know, it wouldn't shock me if Jonas was first-team all-SEC next year. And it wouldn't surprise me if Awaka got out to Arizona and got more post-ups and just played more minutes and got more shots, and that Awaka didn't kind of morph into that 15 points a game, 13 rebound guy. Like, I think those are both pretty realistic possibilities.
I think from, like, a box score perspective, like, you could see Okpara have, like, the worst stat line of all three of those guys. But he will have the better impact of the team, I think, of all three, too.
Well, I would say I don't think I could see it. I think I would predict that. Like, I feel pretty confident that Okpara will have the worst box score counting numbers. Like, when it comes to points and rebounds, now, I think he'll lead them in blocks. You know, I think you could probably, I don't want to say pencil him in for two blocks a game, but, like, I feel like that's kind of the expectations I have for him next year. But impact, yeah, like, he should be on better teams. I think Tennessee should be better than both Arizona and Arkansas, but he's also going to be in charge of doing the important stuff and anchoring a defense that should be the highest-ranked defense of the three teams. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Sam, but, like, I would just go a step further. I would bet a lot of money that he has the worst stats of those three guys. But I think that's okay. Like, Jonas probably needs to be a 14 to 15 points a game scorer at Arkansas. Awaka's probably going to need to be a 14 or 15 points a game scorer if Arizona's going to be any good. Or at least, like, a 12, 13 rebound a game type of guy, if he's able to stay on the court with foul trouble. I don't think Tennessee's going to need Okpara to do anything other than protect the rim and grab rebounds. Catch some lobs, score 6 points a game. Maybe 10. If you can get up to 10, that'd be awesome. Like, I would lock that in a hurry. Like, if you told me he averaged 9 points, 7 points a game, I'd say, deal, banker, yeah. Deal.
I agree with that. I also think if one of his criteria for transferring was he wanted to shoot the three more, I mean, Cal's conducive to that with his offense, but they also have Big Z, who has shown he can shoot the three, and I just don't know if there's room for two big guys doing that. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what little ZD is going to get minutes-wise. I mean, I imagine Adu's going there to be a starter and be the main guy. But, like, yeah, if you have 28 minutes or so, 30 minutes, which really would equal 40 minutes combined of your center that can be versatile and shoot, I think Cal would like that.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to really share the court together. So, like, I think maybe it's a thing of, like, hey, we're going to run the same exact offense, or our center can shoot the ball at both positions. Maybe Adu does get to shoot a lot of threes. I just don't think that was, like, something that he wasn't allowed to do at Tennessee. I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, maybe I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I don't know if Barnes was yelling at him, like, hey, that's not your shot. Get your ass in the post. Or if he just said, hey, I'm missing a couple, I'm not going to shoot them anymore. I don't know. There's a chance he works his ass off on it this offseason and becomes a better three-point shooter and hits shots next year that he wouldn't have hit this year. And then it'll be like, hey, we give Coach Cal that credit, but really it was Adu just actually getting better at it. You think Barnes, real quick while on the way out, do you think Barnes cared that Adu ended up at Arkansas? Do you think he looked at that as, like, any more of a betrayal? I know the fans here did, but I wonder if the coaches did.
You know what I think is he probably views it as he's a kid. He made a decision. I don't agree with it. What I've been wondering about is how does Barnes feel about it relative to his relationship with Cal?
Yeah. You know? Well, I don't think Adu hit the portal to just go to Cal. Like, I think it'd be different if he felt Cal was tampering. I don't think that's what happened. I think Barnes probably trusts Cal to take care of him, because they're always talking about how good of friends they are.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there'd be any hard feelings, because I don't think it was tampering from Cal.
Nah, yeah, I agree with that.
Hour two in the books. Hour three coming at you. Stick with us.